What will be the international reaction to the firing of FBI Director James Comey? Our all-star panel weighs in just a moment. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen there or on iTunes anytime. You can stream us live now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page as well. And just ahead, three prominent local experts on global issues. Join us now to discuss the rapidly changing international scene, the fallout from President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey, and what that means around the world. Get on the line now. 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts. Then later, how an extension of Florida's homestead exemption could affect cities like Jacksonville. Plus, don't miss it as we speak with a real legend, former Supreme and singer Mary Wilson, as she visits Jacksonville and performs. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the fallout continues after President Trump's shocking move yesterday to fire FBI Director James Comey. Multiple published reports say Trump had grown enraged by the Russia investigation Comey was leading at the Bureau. We are learning this morning that grand jury subpoenas have been issued to associates of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn related to the Russia probe, looking at Russia's meddling in the 2016 election and potential collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. Now, against this backdrop, a high-powered panel is coming to the Jacksonville University campus next week with a critically important look at geopolitical challenges around the world, including our relations with Russia, but much more. We are so pleased to welcome them now with this preview as we're joined by Ed Coyle, the Foreign Counterintelligence Representative to the Supreme Allied Command Atlantic and the Division Chief for the Combating Terrorism Directorate for the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. Mr. Coyle, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Also in studio, Ambassador Nancy Soderberg, an American foreign policy strategist and director of the Public Service Leadership Program at UNF. Ambassador Soderberg served in the Clinton administration as Deputy National Security Advisor and alternate representative to the United Nations. Ambassador, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And rounding out our group, Jacksonville UNA Secretary Jill Dawson. She's a political science professor at Flagler College. Thanks so much for being here, Professor. And here's our question to callers. As we preview this important discussion happening next week at JU, we want your thoughts on your concerns about our geopolitical situation. And also, we want to talk about your reaction to the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page, where we are streaming this discussion live right now. Ed Coyle, let's begin with you. I know that a lot of your talk at JU is going to focus on the threat of global terrorism and foreign intelligence threats to national security. I'd like to begin with that one. Considering the fact that President Trump has just fired FBI Director Comey, as he had just concluded testifying about his bureau's investigation into Russia's meddling in our election and potential collusion between associates of the president and Vladimir Putin's Russia, how important is this going to be to your discussion?
Well, it will impact it a little bit, but the ongoing mission of the FBI globally and in the United States to protect our nation from terrorism, along with other federal agencies, will continue. The day-to-day work of the agents will be ongoing. Our relationships with our allies across the globe will continue. And so there'll be a minimal impact. Changes in leadership, just as the same as changes in presidents, will change foreign policy, but the day-to-day work of protecting our nation continues.
And when you look at hotspots around the world, particularly with regard to counterintelligence activities, earlier this morning on NPR, we looked at, Steve Inskeep talked with the NATO Strategic Communications Center director about a new perceived threat when it comes to counterintelligence, disinformation. We saw that come into play during the presidential campaign. How is that factoring into your discussion and your portfolio right now?
Sure. Disinformation campaigns have been around for decades. We've all used them in the military, in intelligence programs, against our adversaries as part of our toolkit, so to speak, in foreign counterintelligence and counterespionage. So it's continuing. It's just more active now because we have so much connectivity to the internet and the globe, and it's a day-to-day occurrence. So it's incumbent upon everybody to look for the deep truth.
All right, and it's 549-2937 to join us. Ambassador Nancy Soderbergh, you're going to be talking about the role of diplomacy and the U.S. role in international affairs. Lots to discuss there, but right off the bat, your thoughts this morning as Washington has been completely shaken up by this surprise announcement.
It's one of the more extraordinary actions by a president. Only one other time has a FBI been fired by the president, and that was Bill Clinton in 1993. I happened to be at the White House at the time when that occurred, and there was all sorts of improprieties about the FBI director at that time. This is quite different. What makes this so awkward is that there is an ongoing and criminal investigation of the White House actors, the former National Security Advisor, some other individuals in then candidate Trump's campaign of, whether there was collusion. And former Director Comey has publicly confirmed this. And to complicate the matter, I think, is timing. Had President Trump done this early on and said that he disagreed with the handling of Hillary Clinton's emails during the campaign, then I think people would have accepted that more. I think there's just confusion in Washington because it's a little late to complain about the handling of Hillary Clinton's emails, and it's a little too close to the announcement by Comey that he is actually investigating close associates of the Trump of possible collusion during the elections in and of itself, which is a really bizarre thing. And then you also have the foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, coming in today to meet with the president for the first time. It's the first time in 4 years that Lavrov has been in Washington. The optics of this couldn't be worse. And so I think there's where this is going to end up, I think, is a special independent prosecutor because.
And you think there will be a bipartisan consensus on that?
Well, there already is. There's a letter by 100 members of Congress overnight, which includes a number of Republicans, including John McCain, calling for an independent prosecutor. I think a lot of people had lost faith in Comey. So that, I think, is an accepted problem, that he had lost faith with many members of Congress and obviously the White House and the Justice Department, although he's very popular in the FBI. People liked his independence. They thought he was a good manager and, I think, very popular. So there'll be some backlash there. But the investigation will continue. And so we'll find out probably, in a year or two exactly what the president knew and when he knew it, which is the big question. But it is one of the more bizarre twists and turns in our history.
And let's bring in Jacksonville UNA Secretary Jill Dawson. You're a political science professor at Flagler College. You'll be talking amidst all of this about the role of the United Nations spreading our mission around the world, America's mission, and much more.
Absolutely. And I think that the optics matter, like what Ambassador Soderbergh said. If we're trying to be a leader in the world, if we're trying to demonstrate the independence of law enforcement, the judiciary, human rights, the perception matters. It matters greatly to our allies. It matters to those that we're trying to push along and become more democratic. And, ultimately, I think that we're going to have to provide some answers for that globally.
All right. There's so much to discuss, whether it's the latest in the Russia probe or your questions about combating terrorism around the world. Ed Coyle in studio to give his expert insight on that. Let's go to your calls right now at 549-2937. Paul in St. John's. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks.
I guess my concern was that whole idea, and I guess they kind of addressed it a little bit, but the fact that we have a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and, there's more than just this. There's so many things that Trump has, that there's been questions on, his emoluments clause and all this, and there doesn't really seem to be much political will for them to do something about it. And it's so obvious to, you know, at least half the country that the guy has problems. And, you know, now that we are in this, and, you know, there's people talking about constitutional crisis, what are we going to do to make sure that we don't put someone in office that has the ability to control who investigates him? I mean, other than the special prosecutor, which would be great, but so far there doesn't seem to be the will. I just would kind of like to get the opinion on where we go if the special prosecutor doesn't happen.
Thanks for the call,
Thank
Paul.
You.
Ed, Nancy?
Good. Well, I think that the situation is law enforcement must be an independent arm of the government, must be objective at all times, and allowed to do their job. The director, although the optics of this is very bad, the day-to-day work and the investigation on the Russia collusion allegations and other investigations the FBI is doing will continue. It doesn't stop because the director changes. He's the face of the FBI. He's the interface between the FBI investigations and the president and the attorney general. So those investigations won't stop, and they are being done independently.
And let's talk a little bit more about that. We learned last night that grand jury subpoenas have been issued to former associates of former NSC head Michael Flynn. Could you walk us through a little bit more of how this process might unfold and how that informs not only the way you see this investigation, but how this affects the balance of power, frankly, around the world? If you accept the idea that Putin is trying to destabilize the West on a number of fronts, this is a critical piece of our role in combating that.
Yes, ma'am, it is. And the grand jury will take the testimony. They will assess it, be part of the report. The FBI's investigation, of course, is ongoing. They have a interface with other law enforcement agencies across the globe. And the Russians have been trying to undermine their government in the West for decades. The fact they're now back in power over the last 5 years, as Putin has tried to reinstitute the Soviet Union, so to speak, and bring it back to power, they will continue to try to undermine Western elections to get favorable candidates. At this point, how much they influenced our election is still to be determined. And so hopefully the grand jury will get that evidence along with the FBI and determine one way or the other that there was or was not any influence in the election.
Is it your contention then that the Bureau can proceed independently, even if there is an appointee put in place by the president who might have the intent to quash this probe?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. When we're, as an investigator, that's our entire basis of our career, is objective, truthful, honest, and thorough investigations. Without regard to who the suspects are or what, we're given a lead on a crime, and it's our job to determine where that crime was committed and take it to the logical conclusion, which is to present it to a prosecutor and let them determine whether it's pursued criminally.
Now, something else you're an expert in is counterintelligence and how the U.S. is protecting itself against espionage, whether it's Russia or another actor.
Yes, ma'am.
When you speak on the JU campus about this, what will the audience learn about what you know?
Well, excuse me, I've been a counterintelligence professional for a number of years, involved in not only active investigations and operations, but in establishing policies for the Department of Defense and to protect our military secrets, which is very difficult to do because there's a massive amount of information and a massive number of people targeting us, not only for military secrets and political secrets, but economic secrets. We've been fighting that issue for years, not only with the Russians and the Chinese, North Koreans and other countries, not only adversaries, but our allies need to want information on us. And of course, they do the same thing to counter our efforts. So hopefully that's what the takeaway will be.
And the number to join is 549-2937. Meanwhile, lots of comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Here's one from Frank. I think this is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump. The grand juries will proceed, expect more serious FBI leaks, and the GOP will be forced to slowly move away from him. Ironically, he has ensured his own impeachment with this move. Nancy Soderbergh. That, of course, might be the view of a lot of Democrats, not the view of Republicans, who largely are cheering the president's move to fire Jim Comey.
Yeah, I think that's wishful thinking. And this is a president who I believe will be there for all 4 years. He was elected to turn Washington on its head, and that's exactly what he's doing. No one knows what the next move of Donald Trump will be, and everyone's scrambling to keep up with it. But I think in the end, as Ed was saying, the truth will emerge here. And you've got the Russian piece of what's happening in Washington is multifaceted, and it's going to be just a drip, drip, drip for years. You've got the former National Security Mike Flynn, who was failing to disclose his relationship with the foreign governments of Turkey and Russia. He failed to comply. He didn't report the income. He's in trouble. And those that prosecution is going to continue unless he gets immunity from something. President Trump could always pardon him. Carter Page was running around the former Soviet Union, basically on behalf of a lot of Putin's cronies. And Paul Manafort was helping the Putin allies in Ukraine. And there's a secret ledger that he got $12.5 million in payments, which he denies. But if that ends up being true, he didn't pay taxes on that. So all of these are going to impact negatively on President Trump. I believe he'll appoint an FBI director who would be independent, but the optics are terrible. He's appointing someone who's going to investigate, you know, his campaign. So that's a really difficult situation. And so there's just kind of mass confusion in Washington. I mean, I think all of our Twitter just lit up last night when this happened. But if you step back from this, the Russian story, I think, is going to continue to be an issue. And as Ed said, this is a playbook that the Russians have been doing for decades. First time I know that they've tried to do it in the United States. Whether it had any impact on the election, I actually don't think we're going to know, because it's impossible to measure how much the fake news that they inserted into our media changed people's votes.
And Professor Dawson, amidst this sexy discussion about Russia, let's also bring it back to the main focus of this forum at JU, the purpose of the United Nations and their sustainable development goals, ending poverty and hunger, good health and well-being, education, gender equality, clean energy, and more. These goals are front and center when we talk about the United Nations and the United Nations Association.
Absolutely. The UN created the Millennium Development Goals many years ago. We hope to meet them by 2015. Ultimately, we didn't, and so they revised these into the Sustainable Development Goals that are ongoing. And all of these tie together, and it's important that the United States and in our role at the United Nations plays a role in pushing these goals. And I know that Ed and Nancy will be talking about these next week, and sort of where do we go from here? What's the future of our role globally?
And how do you see that, Ed Coyle?
Well, excuse me. United Nations has a very distinct mission, and I think that the impact in the future, I mean, we have 65 million displaced refugees in the world right now, which becomes a major issue. We haven't had that many since about World War II. How we handle the rest of the world and the future changes we're seeing, even if we end the Syria issue, it'll still be years before we can recover. And in my opinion, we're going to be looking at a whole new set of issues in the Middle East with a future nuclear Iran and compared to its Sunni neighbors. So that'll be an issue for the United Nations to have to deal with in the future as well.
Lots to discuss.
Yes, ma'am.
This panel's coming up next Thursday night, by the way, on the JU campus. But let's go to a few more of your calls. 549-2937, Lisa in St. Augustine. Hi, Lisa. Good morning.
Good morning. I know you're new to the United Nations aspect of the panel, but I did want to ask if they could touch on the role of Sessions, even though he was supposedly had recused himself from being engaged in the investigation process, and obviously there's his hands all over this firing of the FBI director, and I just wondered what the panel had to say about that.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Nancy.
Well, I think it's clear that the deputy attorney general was put out front and center on this issue. He's the one who made the two-page memo explaining why they no longer had confidence in FBI Director Comey. Jeff Sessions, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, has recused himself from the Russian investigation, which was not addressed in these letters. It was all about Hillary Clinton's emails. And so he, I think, got the cover of the Deputy Attorney General and focused more on the Clinton emails. But I think overall, the relationship had just deteriorated to the point where it was not sustainable at Justice or in the White House.
And there's been reporting that the president asked Sessions to essentially come up with a rationale for firing Comey, who, as you pointed out, though, had angered partisans on both sides over the last couple of years.
Right. There's a lot of the story that still has not come out of what were really the internal discussions between President Trump and the Attorney General and his deputy in terms of what really triggered this. I don't think anybody believes it was the Clinton emails. That was part of it. But then why did he wait 4 months to fire him? That was known when he took office on January 21st. And so it's just, you know, it's the Washington game of what did the president know and when did he know it? And this is going to go on for the rest of this this term, I believe. It feeds the beast of rumors in Washington like nothing else. And it's not going to stop the ins and outs of what actually happened. And we frankly just don't know yet.
All right. 549-2937. Tom on the West Side. Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. I just wanted to point out two interesting things that leap out at about this whole thing. One, the incredible similarity between this and Watergate, which began with a criminal offense and then was compounded by a cover-up, which that seems like where we are now. And the second thing, I think it's very interesting that of the two firings of FBI directors, that Sessions was involved in both. That's what I have to say about this.
All right. Thanks for that. Now, we can talk about the Saturday night massacre when President Nixon fired this special prosecutor, Archibald Cox. But is it fair to make these Watergate comparisons, Professor Dawson?
Not necessarily. We have to remember that there was... We were in the midst of a true ongoing congressional and Department of Justice investigation into the Nixon White House. We were much further along. We had much more a much larger understanding of the collusion and what was going on. But you know, it's certainly fair to talk about how the White House should interact with the Department of Justice and what kind of independence should exist. And so some of the comparisons are fair, but I don't think it's entirely credible to say that it's just like the Saturday night massacre.
All right. Here's an email from Stephen. The FBI may not always be impartial. There were many reports of internal FBI conflict over the aggressiveness that should be pursued with regard to the Clinton investigation. The FBI certainly wasn't impartial under Hoover. Well, he's going back a ways there. But Ed Coyle, what about that?
Yes, sir. Well, again, the politics of the position of the director of the FBI is key. I mean, it's a political appointed position. It's approved by the Senate. But the baseline, and again, I've had some conversations with some former FBI agents that I've worked with, and they were as surprised as a lot of people were when Director Comey came out and made these statements last summer in the midst of an investigation about the Clinton emails, and then again when he came out right before the election. It kind of shocked people. There was two different camps. Obviously, on one hand, it appeared that he presented a logical investigation. Mishandling classified information doesn't have to always be intentional. I've worked those investigations myself in the past of mishandling classified materials. So there are two different camps in regards to that, but the impartiality of the investigations, it's the basis of everything we do as an investigator. If I walk into court and I don't testify truthfully one time, my career is over. And that's, so the objectivity is key. Mm-hmm. The FBI agents that I've worked with live by, you know, fidelity, bravery, and integrity. That's in their bones, that's in their genes, and that's how we all operate, or we try to operate. There'll always be some people that are not perfect. It's just like that in any career. But for the day-to-day basis, everybody I've worked with, you know, we go to work every day to try to protect the United States and the people and do our best job every day.
And this is just a short window into a vitally important talk these experts will be giving on the JU campus next Thursday night. It's the Jacksonville chapter of the United Nations Association hosting a panel discussion, Understanding Today's Global Challenges, next Thursday at the JU Gooding Auditorium, 6 p.m. We're so pleased to have you all in studio. Thank you, Ed Coyle. He's the Foreign Counterintelligence Representative to the Supreme Allied Command, Division Chief for the Combating Terrorism Directorate for the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, Ambassador Nancy Soderbergh, also of UNF, and Jacksonville UNA Secretary Jill Dawson with Flagler College. Thank you all for being here.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And we'll continue to follow this, of course. Much more still ahead on this show, meanwhile. Later, don't miss it, as legend Mary Wilson of the Supremes joins the show. But up next, a look at how an increase in Florida's homestead tax exemption might affect Jacksonville. We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The Chartrand Foundation is proud to support the Jacksonville Public Education Fund, powering the potential of our city's students and citizens. Learn more about how you can impact public education at jaxpef.org.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate. Shop. Jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time, join 1A in Philadelphia as we discuss housing segregation. The racial divides in many neighborhoods are no coincidence. How exactly did it get this way? And what would it take to truly integrate housing? Richard Rothstein on his new book, The Color of Law. Next time on 1A, weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues, as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, Florida lawmakers have approved a proposed increase in the state's homestead property tax exemption. And this could save homeowners some money on their property taxes. The measure has been placed on the November 2018 ballot. But Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Schellenberg says this move to increase the homestead tax exemption may be good for individual homeowners, but it's not good for cities like Jacksonville because it could affect critical services like police and fire. What will this mean for municipalities? Councilman Schellenberg joins us now in studio with his thoughts. Councilman Matt Schellenberg, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Melissa.
And to our callers, what do you think of this constitutional amendment? It would increase the state's homestead exemption by $25,000. So your overall exemption on your home would be $75,000. Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, Councilman House Speaker Richard Corcoran said that this is a big win for all Floridians and would be the largest tax cut in the history of Florida. You don't like it, though. Why?
I think there's a certain amount of arrogance that goes on in Tallahassee, and they think they know best what's going on in the local areas. And I think local people know exactly what they're doing. And if you don't like the local people, then fire them. They'd have, in our case, every 4 years you can do it, or we get term limit after 2 terms. And I think that even my representative basically said that Jacksonville doesn't need the $26 million to operate. Well, apparently
your representative
is Jason Fisher.
Jason Fisher, okay.
And he said that and basically his big supporter is Mayor Curry, and he's basically slapping the mayor in the face and saying, Mayor, you can operate more efficiently with less $26 million that this is going to impact. Let me be a little bit more specific. So if you look at a pyramid and you start chopping off people at the bottom, the people that end up paying more are businesses and other people that have to collect the money. And by the way, they don't save $26 million. And throughout the state, it's a $756 million hit for municipalities, cities, counties going forward. And clearly, what they'll do is their option is the millage rate. So they don't gain anything. They go put on a show. They say we're going to save money, but they really don't.
Okay, so if we lose $26 million in our Jacksonville coffers, if this passes, and by the way, this needs 60% of statewide voter approval in November 2018 for this to go into law. But say it passes, we lose $26 million out of our local budget. What does that mean for Jacksonville in your view?
Well, that's a great question, as you always do on your show. What happens is, because of the pension reform bill that was passed, we will have increase just by natural accretion, an increase in the value of the property. So you'd have increase in the actual ad valorem taxes, plus buying and selling will all have impact. Because of that, we would have about $50 million increase this coming year for construction, repavement of roads, which we haven't done really for 6 or 7 years. Because the uncertainty going forward in August of 18, I mean, we can't plan forward because these projects have to be approved, designed, permitted, and all these kind of things. So all these things that we would like to do for catch-up for the last 5 or 6 years, we have to go back and say maybe some areas can't be improved because of this $26 million potential hit in August of next year.
And it sort of brings the old saying to mind that potholes aren't Republican or Democratic. They tend to need to get fixed no matter where you stand ideologically. This, though, I think I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, because you mentioned that you think your representative, Jason Fisher, is undercutting Mayor Curry on since his imperative is to make sure critical services are funded in Jacksonville.
Right.
Where is the local delegation on this as a whole? Where is City Hall on this? You're speaking out on the City Council, but what about the rest of the players?
I think one of the problems in Tallahassee is that they aren't listening to their constituents who voted for them. They are listening to the leadership. And because of term limits there, it's a leadership issue. If you don't go along and lockstep with the leadership, then you don't get projects that you might want. And there's clearly some projects that are going to, that in the say, and the legislator got approved. But the governor can basically line item veto all those things. And a lot of these people voted against Governor Scott on the Enterprise Florida. Corcoran wanted it, and quite frankly, they all went lockstep except Jay Fant, and he basically was ostracized, and now he's going to leave the state house and run for attorney general because basically Corcoran put him in a bad space. I believe that if basically the legislators would get together and sometimes oppose the leadership because they're supposed to be representing Mandarin, in my case Mandarin, but all of Duval County. I think all of the Duval County representatives voted, at least the Republican side, voted with Corcoran on this issue.
Where do you think the state's voters will be on this amendment in 2018?
It sounds like ice cream. They're going to vote
for that easy passage.
It.
Yeah, hey, passes. I'll save money on my property taxes.
In reality, they don't. And it's a faux position going forward. And I think Corcoran is absolutely wrong in this. And it's devastating to cities and counties. And I think it's unfortunate because they think they're saving money and they're actually not.
Here's an email from Rob. As a homeowner and Jacksonville resident, we would get a break on our taxes, but I would rather pay our fair share and support a healthy local government. That's from Rob, I think in Murray Hill. Where are the rest of your fellow council reps on this?
Well,
that we
passed a resolution asking them not to do this, but unfortunately, they're listening to leadership over there and not listening to the constituents. And I think that's a problem in Tallahassee. It's probably a problem maybe in D.C., but it's more of a problem because of term limits. Understand that these people are running for leadership as soon as they get elected, and sometimes even before they get elected. So I think that everybody wants to be on a leadership position, and that's understandable. But when it differs from your constituents, you have to stand up for your constituents. That's why you were elected. Here.
What about the argument that this provides tax relief to homeowners, though? And that if they have more money to spend, that'll help the local economy and so forth.
I think it's a false narrative because they're not saving money because the city actually has to operate like any business. The important thing is between now and 2030 in the state of Florida, we're going to gain 6 million people. In Jacksonville, we're probably going to gain another 250,000 people. And part of that is increased services, police, things like that. So if you're taking out a revenue to have a certain quality of life in Jacksonville, then you are detrimental to the quality of life. And I think most people are willing to pay a certain amount of taxes as long as it's spent wisely.
Well, again, the voters won't decide this for another year or so, but we'll continue to follow this debate. Thanks for giving us your thoughts about it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Matt Schellenberg is on the Jacksonville City Council representing Mandarin. In a moment, a true legend, as we speak with Mary Wilson of the Supremes. That's next.
Tidbits, family-owned and operated since 1985, specializing in corporate catering and lunch at two locations, Bay Meadows Road and Hendricks Avenue. Menu and catering information at clarastidbits.com. Tidbits, fresh, local lunch.
On the next Fresh Air, novelist Mary Gaitskill, who first became known for her collection of short stories, Bad Behavior, about people whose relationships and sexual relationships were outside of what was defined as normal. She has a new collection of essays. Also, Julia Tertian, whose new cookbook, Small Victory, collects easy recipes for home cooking. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, she is a true legend with 50 years in show business. Mary Wilson, a founding member of the Motown Superstars, The Supremes, is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She's had a string of hits with The Supremes, of course, and as a solo artist, and has written two best-selling autobiographies. You can see Mary Wilson this weekend live on stage in the hilarious production Menopause the Musical at the Times Union Center. I spoke with Wilson and her co-star Terry Adams. Take a listen. Mary Wilson and Terry Adams, both starring in Menopause the Musical. What a delight to have you ladies here. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mary, let's begin with you. It is such a thrill to have a legend such as yourself on the program, a founding member of the Supremes, worldwide rabid following, and now you're in Menopause the Musical. How did this begin? How did you come to be an addition to this incredible cast?
I know. It's something, isn't it? I actually saw the play in Las Vegas, and a friend of mine was in it. And I just went to see it because she was in it. Terry, you might know. Do you know Sky?
I've never worked with Sky, but I know the name.
Yeah, she was in the play, and so I just went to see her, and I fell in love with it. It was like a year or so ago, and they actually asked me that at that time, would I like to be a part of it? And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe so, because I live in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
So it was one of those things, but I just saw it, and it was so hilarious, you know, mm-hmm. and it was so fun that I just said, oh, okay, well, maybe.
And so here you are.
Here I am. Be careful what you ask for, or you might receive it. And it's just so fun because, first of all, it's about women, you know. And the wonderful thing that I see about the play is that there was a time when women were not really together as, you know, like a community. Now women are coming together, and the play has a lot to do with hot flashes, you know, the change mm-hmm. of life and all that stuff. And we all have it, or if mm-hmm. you are fortunate enough to live long enough, you have it. And and it's one of those things that it brings women together, and the play is just hilarious in terms of speaking about the change and hot flashes.
And what does your character do in this show?
I don't have a character. First of all, you mentioned Terry Adams. She and there are three other ladies. What is it? Four ladies, I think.
Yeah, there's four ladies.
Right.
Different types of characters.
Right. Who do you play, Terry?
I play the Iowa housewife.
Oh, that's interesting.
Tell them what that's all about, because she is so funny.
The part is so funny. She probably has the greatest arc character-wise in the show. She, is kind of the naive one and just wants everybody to like her and make friends. And by the end, she really discovers herself.
She comes out.
She comes out, yeah.
I guess in more ways than one, maybe? Okay.
That's all I'll say about that.
Got it, okay.
So the other characters are really funny, because there's one that is more of a, what is this, the superstar?
We have the soap star.
The soap star, yes.
And the Earth Mother, and the professional woman. And now we've got Mary as our fifth cast member and hostess, and it's just going to be a blast. We're all a little starstruck right now.
Were you intimidated at first?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, definitely. So
you're rolling your eyes, Mary, like, why?
Well, because it's so wonderful when you have the opportunity to work with other performers and actors and actresses, and I think everyone looks up to everyone. You see their talent, and it's just a wonderful... I think we on stage have more fun than people in the audience.
Yeah.
Because we kind of... You see the talent is so, it's so wonderful that people have. And in this play, they really are funny ladies. They all are funny.
And I'm sure they are. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, too, as a follow-up, you're such a legendary performer. You've been performing on stage and putting out best-selling albums and books for decades now.
Almost 50. Let's go ahead and say it.
Almost 50
years.
Well,
actually, it's 50.
My gosh. I mean, what an incredible career in entertainment.
Yeah, and who knew?
I mean, and now here you are in this really beloved stage play. Is this your first time on a stage?
Quite a few plays.
You've done a lot of plays.
I've done Vagina Monologue.
Oh, okay.
Monologues. I've done like girl group plays. I've done mostly musicals. I have never really considered myself an actress, even though I wanted to be.
Really?
And so I've done some bit parts in movies and things like that. But this last year, I decided I was going to really pursue it, because I really enjoy being on stage and doing it. So this comes at a wonderful time in my life. Uh-huh. I told everyone I'm 73 years old.
Get out of here.
And I'm having a ball just doing different things, just kind of exploring and just having fun, trying to do whatever I want to do. And
if you're 73, then that's hope for all of us,
right?
To look that good at 73.
It's amazing. Oh, well. I can't get over it. Yeah.
Well, I always had this baby face. When we first started singing as a primates back in the day, they would always call me over and card me because I had this baby face, we were just barely 21.
Right.
And but they wouldn't ask anyone. They also asked me for my ID. So I'm like, finally it pays off. At 73, it really pays off, right?
Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
Now it's
I had the hot flashes too. I mean,
really?
I've been through them.
You've been through them.
I'm over it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Now,
Jerry is not.
You're not there yet. Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun and exciting phase.
Smack dab in the middle of it.
She's a real authentic thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Now, the songs are kind of Motown-esque, aren't they? Like, did you have to learn some new material?
Well, not just Motown. The Beach Boys, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of different popular music, okay. 60s, 70s.
Yes, yes. Yes.
That we just, parody lyrics. So
fun.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of choreography involved that you had to learn.
A lot of choreography. Mm-hmm. A lot of singing and dancing.
I'm still learning.
Really?
Yeah.
How new are you to the cast?
This is my first time. I mean, I haven't done it yet.
You haven't even done it yet?
No. For Terry, she's done 11, she told me. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be the ingenue here. I'm going to be the one.
Wow. 11 years.
Is Jacksonville your first city performing
me?
In this
yes,
show?
Yes.
Oh, what a thrill to be able to
well,
be the
you'll
first
see
one
me fumble.
For No,
but I'm.
She's going to be fantastic, and you can see her for 4 days.
Yeah,
yeah,
Thursday,
4 days
Sunday.
Only.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have a matinee on Saturday and Sunday, as well as an evening show.
Now, when you came into the lobby, of course, there were people so excited to have their photo taken with you here at WJCT. Being an original member of the Supremes and everything that goes along with that, is that something that just people encountering you in daily life, they get a little freaked out, a little starstruck? I can't tell you how many people have come to me today and said, I just want to see her. I just want to see her in the hall. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's a mystique, I think,
it's wonderful.
To the Supremes.
It really is wonderful. And probably only this time in my life have I realized how far we were three little black girls growing up at a time when segregation was still here. In fact, I remember the first time we toured with the Motown Review in 1963, we came to Jacksonville, Florida.
Really?
Yes. And that was a time when segregation and all that was still happening.
Do you remember where you stayed here?
I have
it was
no
like?
Idea.
Okay.
So if anyone is listening, you know, and they have some flyers from that time, I'd like it because I'm actually writing my third book now. It's a coffee table book, not writing it, putting it together, based upon our gowns. And I'm trying to collect all of the flyers and places that we have performed. And Jacksonville was one of the ones we performed in 1963 before we became famous.
Wow.
So it'd be good to get some info, you know.
Maybe we can find out. It would be good. Yes. Let's try to find that out.
But, you know, time has gone on. And what's really good, if you enjoy doing what you're doing, you have this longevity and you can go on and on and on. So I'm very fortunate to have been in the Supremes, to still be alive.
and thriving. And what an inspiration for the other cast members.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here next to her and I'm still a little
girl.
Starstruck. I know. So I can't wait to call my mom. She's been bombarded all morning with people taking her picture and I haven't done it yet, but I'm telling you now on the air, Mary, I will be needing some pictures with you.
Me and your girlfriend.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you said your mom because a lot of people say their grandma.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right. I got to get this for my grandma and my granddad. I'm like, okay. Because I'm a grandmother as well. I have eight. And I got to say this on the air, that my son who passed away, today is his birth, would have been his 34th, I think, birthday.
Aww.
So I'm kind of happy to, you know, to know that.
Yeah.
I had him for so many wonderful years. So all those people out there who are looking, listening, you know, we all lose people eventually in our lives, and it's about how you remember the good times for those people. You know,
sure.
The memories are just so great.
And this whole musical is about the changes
that
we go through.
It's about women celebrating this time in their lives, and not to think that the best times of their lives are behind them, but to really celebrate this time in their life and know that some really great things are still coming forward,
still around the corner.
Yeah.
And you know, also it's so well written, wouldn't you say that it's everything really. When I was looking at the lyrics, learning the lyrics, the new lyrics, to see how they, you said parody, how they put everything where it matches, you know, it matches what it's all about, but yet still you still have that music of like Tina Turner, you know, she says, you must understand that the touch of a man is just part of the act. You know, so it's really kind of cool, but you got to remember the new lyrics and not the old ones.
Yeah.
First night, I don't know what I'll be singing.
I'm sure it's going to sound amazing. Oh my gosh, it's such a thrill to have you both here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's Supremes legend Mary Wilson and her co-star Terry Adams on stage in Menopause the Musical through Sunday at the TU Center. Tickets at fscjartistseries.org. Well, finally this hour, Jacksonville author Valerie Bowman is the award-winning author of historical Regency romances. This month, she releases her 10th full-length novel. She joins us now with more about the new book, Never Trust a Pirate. Right off the bat, I'm interested in this. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Of course you should never trust a pirate. That's obvious.
No.
But this is a romance novel, and this is your 10th.
This is
amazing.
It's number 10. I can't believe it myself.
What inspired you to write in this genre of Regency romance? Because this is a multi-billion-dollar industry. These novels are so popular.
Yeah, when I was a teenager, actually, I read historical romances all of the time, and I just loved them, and they actually helped me through a really bad time, you know, some depression. My dad died when I was a kid, and they just made me happy. And mm-hmm. one of the things I tweeted to you this morning was just in this political climate, we all need just happy ever after and some
in some way or another.
Yes.
And that's what your books are all about. What's the plot of Never Trust a Pirate?
Never Trust a Pirate is in my Playful Bride series. All of the books in that series are based on famous plays. So the first one was Cyrano de Bergerac, and then I have several others. But this one is The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Very nice.
I call it The Scarlet Pimpernel Meets Dirty Rotten Scoundrels in Regency England.
I loved that movie. So it's a really, there's romance and intrigue all mixed up in that plot.
Yes,
then.
Yes.
So that sounds cool. And so this is your 10th book.
Yes.
You're really on a roll.
Yeah, yep. And all the books are from St. Martin's Press, and I'm just enjoying them. I have three more to write in this series.
So they contract with you?
Yes.
For a certain number of books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's inspiring to so many budding authors in this area. It's possible to really become a prolific author if you work hard at it.
Oh, absolutely. And the Romance Writers of America organization has a chapter here called First Coast Romance. So I would really encourage anyone interested in getting into it.
You're having a big book party, meanwhile, for Never Trust a Pirate Saturday night?
Yes, Saturday from 5 to 8 at Bella Sarah on King Street. Everyone's invited.
They can come out and meet you, get a copy of the book signed. Now, this is on King Street in Riverside.
Yep.
Bella Sarah, 5 p.m., it's the launch of Valerie Bowman's latest, Never Trust a Pirate. The Jacksonville author is out this month with her 10th full-length historical Regency romance novel. The award-winning Valerie Bowman, one of the leading talents in the literary scene locally. And thanks so much for being with us. Have a great time out there Saturday.
Thank you, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. And next on 1A, FBI Director James Comey is out. What's next? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.